Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. My name is Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. For 9 years, we have been ranked the number one entertainment career advice internet radio show worldwide. Now, this show is for you if you are questioning your career reality by considering or currently pursuing a career in the entertainment industry. Now, the guest on this show will give you tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in the entertainment industry. Now, the guests on this show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, producers, directors, casting directors, talent managers, agents, screenwriters, actors, singers, songwriters, comedians, novelists, script supervisor, stunt people, special effects directors. I'm just telling you, the list goes on and on and on. If you want to know how and what it takes to make it, you have to go to our website, latalkradio.com. Look for Question Reality, which is the name of my show. And we have been on, as I said earlier, 9 years. So if you start and go all the way down the bottom, I have all of the shows listed by the career first. That way you can very easily find what career you're interested in, and then the name of the person and their website. Now, what's special about this show is that all of our guests have been selected because they're at different stages of their careers, from celebrity status, obviously, to professional. And then once in a while, we have the novice or the beginner. So that means that we will definitely have someone on the show who will be able to answer any of your show business career questions. Now, if you missed any of the shows or you want to seek advice about a specific entertainment career, again, go to our archive page, which is latalkradio.com, and just search for the show or by my name, and you can download and listen to us 24 hours a day. Now, all of the Question Reality shows are also available for free on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. And also, make sure you get our new app. Just design, looks cool, hip, it's wonderful. It's on the latalkradio.com website, and it's located towards the bottom. Finally, if you want to be a guest on our show or refer someone to be on our show to promote themselves, their products, and help listeners with sage career advice, we are currently booking for the fall and the winter. We only have a couple dates left. As you know, our shows are always booked 6 months to a year in advance, but we have, I think, about maybe 4 dates left. So go to questionrealityradioshow.com, not latalkradio.com. That is where we air our show. Questionrealityradioshow.com is where you go and click the contact link, and that is where you submit for consideration. Now, as always, every single week, there's nothing but excitement on this show because we have exciting guests, and today is no exception. Today we have Michael Ajakwe Jr. Yes! Yes! Oh my gosh, listen to that! That's fantastic! Michael is the founder of the world's first and most popular web series festival, LAWebFest.com. LAWebFest.com. And Mike is an Emmy-winning TV producer. He is a 4-time NAACP Image Award-winning playwright, theater producer, TV producer, and a veteran TV comedy writer-producer. Such shows include Martin, one of my favorites, Sister Sister, and Eve. He's also been a writer-producer for TV One's Unsung music documentary series, and having done Image Award winning profiles on Denise Williams, Ray Parker Jr., and Sly and the Family Stone. And four of his plays have been published and are also available at Samuel French or on Amazon.com. It's a collection of three one acts. One is called South Central Stories, and his Image Award winning company Policy is also on there. Now, since 2010, Mike has personally watched all 2,000 plus web series that submitted to his festival. That's over 25,000 webisodes. And LA Web Fest is held annually at legendary Sony Pictures Entertainment in Culver City. And recently, which is the most exciting news of all time, Mike successfully adapted his web series, Who, into a television series, Beauty and the Baller. Beauty and the Baller. And you can see that on Facebook right now. It's facebook.com and then Beauty and the Baller. And it's sold to international entertainment giant Viacom to air on its BET cable network, Centric TV, starting, ready for this, Saturday, July 22nd at 10. Saturday, July 22nd at 10 p.m. And this is what we are going to talk about today. And I want you to go there right now while I tell you about something. But go to Facebook.com, Beauty and the Baller, and check that out while I just briefly tell you about something very exciting. Last night, I had the privilege and honor of going to a film fundraiser for a friend of mine named Valerie McCaffrey. And as if you're in the entertainment industry, you know that she is a celebrity casting director, talent manager. She casts all the top talent for the shows. Well, she has a movie that she's going to be funding called Dirty Bomb, and I want you to check it out. It is just an incredible story, and if you haven't heard about it, you will be hearing about it. Again, it's just in the inception of, I think it's in development right now, but it's called Dirty Bomb, so you might want to Google it, and it will be coming out, and it is an incredible story. Basically, it is about in World War II, in the prison camps, they, as you know, they had to work, and they worked hard. Well, a bunch of the prisoners basically decided, you know what, we are going to sabotage this bomb so that it does not go off. And that's what they did. And boy, were they punished, as you can imagine. But it is a story that has been untold. This is a story that is not known, true story about what these Jewish prisoners did to sabotage this bomb so that it would not go off. And again, it's called Dirty Bomb, and Valerie McCaffrey. So I will be updating you a little bit in the future when we have more information about that. But just type in Valerie McCaffrey, Dirty Bomb, and you'll be able, just Google it, and you will be able to see what's going on with it via their website. It's on Facebook, so I would imagine you can find out a ton of things. Now, without further ado, welcome Mr. Michael Ajakwe. Oh, what? You are slacking. You need to sit up. So Albert's over there. You know my co-host, Albert. He's solely in charge of my tacky little MP3 voices. I always get, yeah, there you go. There's another one. And he's just sitting there. I think he's dozing off over there. So you better be on the ball, you. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Priscilla.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you and I are sitting here today via our very dear friend, Yolanda Erica Bugs, who I have been working with as a producer on many of her projects, including the one in your very first festival in which we won, which was called Kid Justice. Yes, and
that was a great show.
Yeah, and I won, I was one of the producers, so we won a little producer award, and it was so exciting because back then, that was the inception of not only internet radio, but also no one had really heard across the country what web series were. So you were a visionary to even decide to start that. So let's go way back and talk about what made you decide to start this WebFest, LA WebFest.
Well, in 2009, I did my, after, you know, spending 2 years observing web series and very curious, but not really understanding them, I did my own web series in 2009 called Who. I shot it at my home in Sherman Oaks. And my editor and I, we enjoyed, I'd go over, we just watched the episodes. We did three, and then we did three more. And so after a few months, we're like, you know, this is kind of claustrophobic. You know, this might be fun if we're enjoying this together.
Right.
Maybe if we expanded this and brought in more people, maybe they would enjoy it also. Not just our show, but what if we showed, you know, several shows?
Right.
And that was kind of the kernel, but I didn't want to do it. It was in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do it. And I was waiting for someone else to do it. You know, you say, oh, it's a good idea, but let somebody, I don't want
right.
the responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility.
The whole year went by and no one had done it. And I said, I really believe that if you put them on a big screen, people would come and watch them.
Yeah.
Just like they do at film festivals.
Right.
So my Christmas present to myself, 2009, was to start the new year with this festival. And so I went to a theater, Stage 52, which no longer exists, but I did a bunch of plays there. And I knew they had a big screen, a big 12-foot by 15-foot screen that dropped out of the ceiling. They had 100 seats. It's a beautiful theater. And I talked to the owner day after Christmas, 2009, and said, I want to try to do this. I don't really have any money. He said, don't worry about it, Mike. Your credit's good with me.
Wow.
You can pay me later. And I said, okay.
Wow.
So I set a date, March 25th, I think, 25th, 26th, 27th. Announced it in February. And 6 weeks later, we had about 1,500 people come from everywhere. Mostly L.A. came through to the event over a three-day period. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we had our award show. It was packed. It was a room. It was just one little room with 100
yeah.
people in it. But people were really happy, and nothing like this had been done for web series. And
so at that point, it was only your web series, right?
Yes. It was my festival. But there were 50 shows in the WebFest.
Okay.
It wasn't just my show.
Okay.
There were shows from when I put it out there. I got shows from all over the country, mainly L.A., New York, but then Chicago. I got from North Carolina, South Carolina. I got one from Canada. I got one from Mexico. I remember thinking, wow, they're doing web series in Mexico?
Yeah, that's what
they're
I was wondering.
They're making web series in Canada?
Yeah. So
it
actually,
really
it must have started people doing these before 2009, but
yes.
just didn't have a venue.
Yes, exactly.
So where were they airing?
They weren't airing anywhere.
They weren't airing.
They were putting them online, maybe if they had websites.
Maybe YouTube or?
Maybe YouTube, but mostly they were putting them on. This is when you had to have your own website.
Right,
YouTube
right.
wasn't really that popular back then.
Right.
But they were putting them on their websites, but you weren't really finding them.
Exactly.
You know, there were some out there, but they were on individual websites, and you had to really, someone had to tell you about them. It was hard to find them.
Right.
Not like it is now. It's a lot easier. And but they all liked the idea of being able to come together, meet each other, and know people who were doing what they're doing. Because some of these people felt, especially from other countries, like New Zealand. We got one from New Zealand, and these people would feel like, they felt like freaks.
Yeah.
In their countries, because no one really understood
yeah.
what they were doing. But when you come together, a bunch of freaks come together,
yeah.
you're not freaks anymore.
That's
it's normal.
Right. How did you notify everyone that you were putting together this LA Web Fest with all these people you did not know?
I put a press release out,
okay.
and I had a publicist at the time. I used PRWeb.com, which was very helpful.
Oh, yeah.
And they went to the website. I built a website, had a website built, and they went to the website. There was something that was popular back then, not Film Freeway, before Film Freeway. Without a box.
Yeah.
I didn't use them. I thought it was, the fees were too expensive.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't use them. I just used a press release and the website.
Wow.
And
you got people from all over the world just with
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We got about 80, about 90-something submissions, maybe 92. I chose 50 shows out of the 92. And those were the ones that we showcased.
Now, did you, when you were trying to get all of these people to submit web series,
mm-hmm.
did you use the term web series, or did you say, or short film, or?
Web series.
Did you just say web series?
Web
so
series.
At that point, people knew what web series were if
yes.
they had created.
Yes, people who were making web series and the few people who were watching them, they knew what they were.
Because I know in 2000, because I started this show in 2008, and I was actually involved as a producer on a web series from a girl who I didn't even know, and I've been in the entertainment business for like over 25 years, and She said, oh, I'm going to be producing a web series. And I'm like, what's a web series? And I thought, I felt incompetent not knowing what a web series was. And she said, well, it's like the new thing. And so even in 2008, there were still people who didn't know what web series were, who were in the business.
Well, even in 2017, there are people, a lot of people still really don't. Right. Or they know them, they don't really understand
them.
I still have people say,
them.
What's a web series?
And they think it's a short film. Mm-hmm. They're confused where you see them. And every time I tell someone about, I'm producer on one, they're like, well, what channel is it on? Everybody's like, what channel is it on? They don't understand internet radio either.
Yes.
Because I still have people saying, what channel is it on? Fortunately, here we do have channel 1 and channel 2. So I just tell them what internet radio is. But a lot of people do not understand what internet radio is. And it's huge. It's worldwide. Every single television station and radio station now has internet radio. They air all of their shows. So people still don't know, but eventually, hopefully, they will. Now, what did it take for you to start this WebFest? Because honestly, a lot of people don't realize the technical things that you need to do in order to start a festival.
Well, to me, I think, first of all, it just starts with vision.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to have a lot of money, because I didn't really have any money when I started it.
Right.
But I had a vision for what I saw, which is a bunch of creative people making these shows in their basements or in their you know, middle of the night, sharing them only with the crew,
right,
coming together. And my whole idea was a village, bringing the village together.
Right.
Let's celebrate each other. And at the end of the let's educate each other also, because people have different levels of expertise. Some people are amateurs making, they just want to express themselves, and they're making web series as an amateur.
Yeah.
And then some people are very skilled.
Yeah.
They've trained for this. Some people are professional filmmakers.
Right.
So they're different skill sets. And so they learn from each other on panels and workshops, talking about various aspects, every aspect of making a web series, from creation to production, post-production, marketing. All of that's important. So we have, I thought we got to have that educational informational panel, not just for people in who are making shows, but also the public.
Yeah.
So members of the public can come to this event, and like you said, if they don't know exactly or aren't clear what they'll find, by the time they leave a panel or two, they'll know what a web series is.
A lot of people think that a web series is a short film. And can you explain the difference between a web series and what a short film is?
Yeah, short film is a standalone, you know, that's a standalone project. Mm. That's something that has a beginning, middle, and end, and it's a one and done.
Right.
It doesn't continue beyond
right.
that, just like a movie.
Right.
If they do a sequel, that may or may not happen. But normally, most movies don't have a sequel.
Right.
A web series is like a television show. It's an ongoing, even if it has a self-contained wrap-up in that episode, it's an ongoing series of characters that you follow and learn from as they grow an arc, et cetera.
Right.
And it can be, web series can be 6 episodes. It could be 3 episodes, 6 episodes, 9 episodes.
And it can be 5 minutes. It can be 10 minutes.
Well,
right? You
well,
like to keep it
keep
around
short.
Five.
What separates a web series from a TV series is length.
Yes.
The big thing is length. You want to keep them short. If you're doing comedy, you want to keep comedies under 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The shorter, the better. You don't have to have a 15-minute comedy.
Right.
In fact, you'll lose people if it's too long. I don't
That's
care how
right.
good it is.
I've seen someone submit things to me, and they call it a web series, and it goes on 20 minutes, and you don't want to, tell somebody how to do something or hurt their feelings, but I say, well, you might want to take that 20 minute and break it up into like 5 minutes, 6 minutes. I try to explain to them that you could, if you made a short film, you could actually take that short film and do a little tweaking, but you could break it up and make it a web series. Am I right?
You could, and some people do that. I personally don't. I used to think that was clever, but I actually don't anymore, maybe because I've seen so many web series. I really don't consider that a pure web series. That's like a bastardized web series.
Okay.
You can pass it off as a web series.
Okay.
It's like, you know, you can, you know, put lipstick on a pig.
Oh.
Right? It's still a pig.
Right.
In this case, you can take a short film and cut it up. It's still a short film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A web series is, to me, it's its own beast. It's its own animal where, just like television, you know, you can film a movie and play it on television, but it's still a movie.
Right.
It doesn't become a television show because it's on the television.
Right.
It has to be, for it to be a television, it has to adhere to the rules of TV.
Mm-hmm.
For it to be a web series, to me, it has to be serialized storytelling that's told in short bursts. as opposed to longer bursts for TV, or very, very short bursts for commercials.
Okay.
That tell a story.
So beginning, middle, and end.
Beginning, middle, and end.
The every challenge, web, every
yes. Okay. Drama, comedy, reality has to have a beginning, middle. Just like, I mean, that's that doesn't change. That doesn't change for storytelling. Period.
Right. No matter what. So every webisode is what they're called. Every webisode should have, according to Michael, a beginning, a middle, and an end. How do you create continuity when you have to have a beginning, a middle, and end for a webisode?
Well, just like you do with television, just like you do with any other form. I mean, you just have to do it faster because you have less time. So you don't have a lot of time to, you have even less time to BS, and you've got to be very specific and know what your scene is about. Right. A lot of times it means getting into a scene later, leaving a scene sooner, but making sure that you've satisfied, you know, the intent. Why are we here? What's the purpose of these characters being here? And what's next?
Right.
Same thing, you're just doing. And that's the challenge. That's where a lot of, especially traditional people raised in regular television and film, even plays, they will dismiss a web series.
Yeah.
Really, because
they
don't want they don't want to deal
that's
with
right.
it because it's shorter. It's hard enough to write a television show.
Right.
That's hard, you know, especially if you're used to writing novels or you're used to writing plays or used to writing
features.
Mm. And now you have to write something shorter than television.
Right. And tell a whole entire story.
Tell a whole story. Satisfying. You develop characters.
That's right.
They say, oh, that's nothing. There's no money in that. Really, what they're saying is, I don't want to do that.
They say the same thing about short films because I own a production company. I only produce short films and music videos. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I don't have patience to be working on a feature film forever. It just takes too long. And it really depends on what you want to do. I love shorts because you get in there, you get them done, you move on. And it's an art. I'm more impressed with a project that costs less money, but after you see it, you go, wow, I never thought of that. And it leaves you thinking for years. Perfect example of that, a guy in England would turn me on to webisodes because when I was working with this producer, I said, well, I'm going to have to check them out before I get involved because I'm not really understanding what a webisode was. There was a guy in England, his name was Dom Bridges, and he wrote, actually, it was what he wanted to become a web series, but he didn't have money. He had equivalent of $500. So he turned it into a short, hoping that eventually he could do it. And it was called Bitch. Now, you think that's not a nice title, but you would have to watch this. Right, Albert? After I saw this, my mouth was wide open. I could not believe that after I watched this 5-minute little short that I felt like I had seen a whole feature film, beginning, middle, and end. And I can usually figure things out in 5 minutes, where it's going, who did it. Could not figure it out. It was such a twist. It blew my mind. And I said, I will fund you for the webisodes. I love what you did. So when people think about web series and they think, oh, there's no money in it, let's talk about just a couple of the web series that have been picked up by television, specifically Broad City, right? And then there was one that Felicia Day did, and she ended up, because the web series became so popular, she ended up getting cast and is a regular on Supernatural, and she's huge now. She has like a following of millions and millions and millions of people. Her web series got picked up, but I know of at least three of them, can't think of the other two off the top of my head, that went on to be picked up, and now they're just still on, and they have made the original creators millions of dollars. So let's talk about the possibility of having a web series and having it picked up. What do you have to do? Because this has happened to you.
Let me just first of all say that I really laugh when people say there's no money in web series. As if there's money in short films.
Right.
As if there's money in features. As if there's money in television. As if there's money in playwriting. Mm. There's no money in any of those things. Most people are not making a living as feature film writers, directors, as short film writer directors, as playwrights, as actors in theater, and they're not working in television.
Mm-hmm.
And they're aspiring TV writers. Most of them are not working as television writers.
Right.
So there's no money in any of it.
Yeah.
So if you just, to me, I tell people, you're trying to do this for the money, you should go to medical school or go to law school. You have a much better chance becoming a doctor or a lawyer than being a successful writer in any of these mediums where you're making a good living.
Right.
So I don't think web series should be, the feat of web series should be held to a higher standard mm-hmm. than everyone else. But it tends to be. Well, people say, well, where's the money? I'm like, well, where's the money in short films? Where's the money in features? Where's the money in television? Most people who are trying to do this, most actors in SAG, 90% aren't working. Well, only 5% are working,
right? That's so right.
The Writers Guild, the same thing. Only like 5% of the writers are working.
Right.
So I don't think it's fair to single out web series and say, where's the money? I personally think there's more opportunity in web series to make money or make a living or some kind of living than in traditional television, theater, or film, because you have more control over it and because you can reach a worldwide audience and you don't need anyone's permission.
That's right. And you gotta be, and first of all, you shouldn't be thinking, where's the money? Because, I mean, you should be creating art, and usually, you know, I mean, we all want money, but you got to be doing it because there's passion and love for the project. The money will come if people love it. So focus on the love and passion. And they don't think about if you are making a web series, for example, just if you want some money, you got to know how to get it. But for example, you can go to Coca-Cola and you can say, I'm making a web series, submit your thing and say, I would love to do product placement. I'd love to do a product placement deal with you. It's been done. There's a guy who made a fortune by adding a, adding a product that is nationally, a worldwide known product. So there are things that you can do. You just have to be creative enough to get out and do it. But product placement is a great
There are. But I think with this business, this, like you said, if you're doing this for the money, you're in the wrong business.
You are.
You're going to go broke. You're going to go crazy.
Right.
You better be doing this first because you have something to say, because you love what you're doing. Because most of us, if I was doing this for the money, I would have been out of, gone a long time ago. It washes you out. If you're doing it for the money, it'll wash you out quickly.
That's right.
If you happen to make money, great.
Yes.
Great. And we do want to make money.
Right.
I'm not mad at anybody that doesn't want to make money. But if this is your goal, again, I say to you, you're better off going to med school or law school or something where you're guaranteed in 4 years or 6 years you're going to make money.
Yeah, this is not a guarantee.
In answer to your question about what's happening, again, the reason I feel like the web series gives you more opportunity is because, like you mentioned, the ladies behind Broad City who were friends with Amy Schumer at UBC, Uptown Comedy Brigade, who brought them over. She had a deal at Comedy Central, brought that web series in there. They adapted it for television. The show is a success. It's airing on TV. That adaptation was successful.
That's right.
Lisa Kudrow had a show called, even though she was already a star, she wasn't on television. She did a web series called Web Therapy. She had all her famous friends as a part of it, Meryl Streep and so many other famous people in her show. Showtime saw it. They picked it up. It was on for a couple of seasons as a show. You have the situation going on right now with HBO and Issa Rae, who was in the LA Web Fest with her show before she did Awkward Black Girl, a show called the Fly Guys Present the F Word. She was not in the show. She wrote, directed, and produced the show. She won awards from us for writing, directing, and producing. She was wonderful. We knew there was something great about her then. And then she did the Awkward Black Girl. It did really well, got millions of views. She had a deal at one point with Shonda Rhimes at ABC. But they still didn't quite know what to do with Issa. And then I kept saying to myself, why don't they just option her web series and develop it as a series? That's what I kept saying. You know, all those years when she was kind of, they had their eye on her, but they couldn't figure out what to do with her television. And then somebody at HBO, I guess they said, let's option.
Yeah.
They didn't talk to me, of course, but they decided to option her web series that everybody loved and let her adapt it for a TV show, and then you have Insecure.
Right.
The rest is history. Now she's a television star, making money, et cetera. And then you have the guys behind the show High Maintenance at HBO, which was a Vimeo web series.
Right.
It was on a couple years ago. It did really well, got a lot of attention, and then HBO came in, optioned it, had them do it for HBO. It's in season 2.
Absolutely.
So you're going to see more of that because it's a great way to do proof of concept, a cheap, inexpensive way to do proof of concept and have control.
Right.
Control as well. Because some of these things, if you can make a short film or feature film independently or even a TV show, but you may not necessarily have control when it goes to, if they pick it up, they're trying to get rid of you and put it in the stars. But for a web series, for some reason, they let the the stars are create. They let them stay involved.
Yeah.
In every case, those people have stayed involved.
Yeah, and which brings me to Beauty and the Baller, and its evolution from a web series to being sold on Viacom via BT Networks. Now, I understand from Yolanda that it used to be on. I might be getting right. And Basketball Wives. What? Why am I?
No. What happened is. Before the show was sold to Viacom, the show underwent four name changes. The web series was called Who. The original incantation of when I was adapting it, it was originally called Threesome.
Okay.
And then I changed the name to Trophy Wife.
Okay.
And then ABC put out a show the same year we were filming, 2013. They put out a show called Trophy Wife.
Okay.
And then they had the gall to pick it up.
No.
I'm like, oh, God, I got to change my title. Then I changed the title, and then they had the gall to cancel the show after one season. But I'd already changed it to Basketball Wife at that time.
Right.
And then when we licensed it to Viacom for BET Networks for their Centric channel, one of the things they said is, hey, we have a franchise, as you know, called Basketball Wives, a reality franchise on VH1. And
right.
And we don't want to do anything to confuse that brand with your brand, et cetera. Can we change the name? I said, sure. They said, why don't you come up with some names? We'll come up with some names. And so I did. I came up with about 10 names. Our first meeting last year, they threw out a name. First name they threw out was Beauty and the Baller. Well, Beauty and the Baller was my second choice out of 10 names.
Right.
So I didn't even want to deal with my first choice. I was happy enough that we found a title that I was very comfortable with right off the bat.
Right.
And so we switched the name to Beauty and the Baller.
Okay.
From Basketball Wife. That's why it's now called Beauty. And that's what Yolanda meant.
Ah.
So, yeah, it's undergone several name changes. I like the idea of having a title that tells you exactly what the show's about.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking foreign, I'm thinking international, because web series makes you think international.
Mm.
And I'm thinking if someone is reading the name of this show in France, in Italy, in Spain, you know, in the Dominican Republic, and they see the title, will it give them some idea of what to expect?
Right.
And Basketball Wife does that.
Right.
And so does Beauty and the Baller.
Yeah.
You know that she's beautiful and he's an athlete.
Now tell us, what is Beauty and the Baller all about? Is it just about, as opposed to like Basketball Wives, which was a whole bunch of wives that were married to basketball players, mm-hmm. What is Beauty and the Baller about?
First of all, the funny thing about Basketball Wives is those women aren't even married to basketball players.
What?
They're girlfriends and side chicks, but that's what I don't watch reality shows. So that's a whole other thing. But my show is actually about a woman really married to an athlete. It's about a beautiful, regular girl. She's not. There's nothing extraordinary about her except she's beautiful.
She's not siliconed up.
No, she's not siliconed up.
She's just a natural beauty.
Natural beauty. No. And she marries like the star of the Lakers, let's say.
Okay.
We don't use the Lakers. We have a different team. But she marries like the star. Like if Kobe Bryant was still playing, like she marries Kobe.
Okay.
And her life changes because she's with this guy. And we take it in their marriage. They're 4 years into being married.
Okay.
We don't take them as like newlyweds right away.
Okay.
They're 4 years in, so they kind of know each other. They kind of have a system of how they operate. And even though, and it's about how they navigate their relationship outside of the spotlight.
Okay.
And, you know, with their family, friends, and their staff, because they have a staff, you know, a living staff. And so it's really like a traditional family show, only they're filthy rich, and they can do things that most normal people can't do. But part of her job in the relationship, she tries to keep it real.
Okay.
She tries to keep it real. She keeps them grounded. But they still have problems like regular, like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, people forget about. People who are famous or wealthy, they still have problems just like we do.
Yes.
You know, they can deal with their problems in a different way because they have money. They can go take a vacation or fly somewhere or whatever. But those problems don't change just because you have money or wealth or beauty. But one thing about this show is that even though it's called Beauty and the Baller, if she wasn't beautiful, if she wasn't like this raving beauty and he wasn't this big baller, big pay baller, they'd still be together.
Wow, that's important.
And that's kind of the foundation of the show. It's really not about her beauty and his money.
Yeah.
Or stardom. It's about that, what connects us as people.
Because I had read, it said that your goal for the show, its purpose is bringing back love, or bringing black love back to prime time?
Yes.
And showing a young black couple that care for each other and work together.
Yes.
So
that's very true.
Are you going to be integrating, well, I guess, I don't know how you would do this, but are you going to be focusing on specifically problems that they have, which might be black love problems or racial problems or anything.
No, what I really mean by that,
because
Priscilla,
a lot of
is,
people don't know what goes on. Like if you're from Iowa watching the show, you have no idea what kind of lives people live in LA or New York or Florida when they're celebrities and they're basketball players or football players and people of color or people of non-color. I mean, they don't know. So that's important to bring up various
things. Yeah, what I mean by that is, if you look at television today, you see, you don't see very many shows. I grew up on a lot of comedies, Good Times, The Jeffersons, The Cosby
Show. And Ernest Thomas, what's happening?
Yeah.
One of my dear friends.
I love Ernest. Ernest is a good friend of mine, too. A lot of those shows, they showed a couple, husband and wife. Sometimes they had money, sometimes they didn't.
Right.
But it always showed them working together, how a couple works together.
Right.
And the black community, unfortunately, in our community, this is nationwide, you have like the divorce rate is like 60%. The divorce rate in the black community is like 75%.
Mm.
Well, you have 3/4 of black homes are being raised by women.
Mm-hmm.
They're not being raised with a mom and dad. So you have a whole generation of kids, youth, who don't know what it's like to be in a relationship or married or seeing two people work together. So, and then you have these reality shows that reinforce a lot of stereotypes, and they're always showing, especially when they're dealing with black couples, they're always fighting each other, talking crazy to each other, just calling each other by their names.
Wanting to rip their weaves out
and just horrible.
Yeah.
And, because train wrecks are what makes people watch those shows. But the residue is that you have a whole generation of kids who have no idea what it means to be in a stable, loving relationship. And that's one of the reasons why when Barack Obama, this is something no one talked about, but I noticed it. When Barack Obama became president, mainly for a lot of black women, he became that dad or that male figure that they didn't grow up with in the house.
Right.
They only, because the mom raised them, for most of them. And so he became like that. He was like this fantasy man because a lot of them, and that's why people were always rooting. I always felt like they rooted for Obama. To me, a lot of black people rooted for Obama, especially women, more for what he represented.
Mm-hmm.
As a black man with a black woman who he cared about and loved and always treated like a queen,
right,
than any of his politics,
right.
I swear. Because black women were rabid, not just supporters, rabid. I know women who I'm friends. I know women I have dated who I thought loved me or once upon a time, but no, they love Barack more than they love me. Trust me. You couldn't say anything.
Right.
Like, well, didn't he just, well, you think maybe he.
Hell no.
But a lot of it was because he was that guy. Here's a good guy. He's a clean cut, good, educated, good guy who's taking care of his woman, his black woman. And I don't care what he does.
Yeah.
I'm supporting him.
Right.
And so, and that told me something. This is around the time I was developing this show. And I felt like there's a need out there. We have to show more images, especially to the generation right now, because a lot of them are just lost when it comes to they don't even see why should you be in a relationship?
Right.
For what?
Right.
You know? And so part of the Trojan horse of the show for me is showing these kids, this generation, that, it's okay to be with someone and you don't have to always get along. This is not a perfect couple.
Mm-hmm.
They don't agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you have to work things out, because if you break up with some or stop dealing with some every time they piss you off or every time they do something you don't like, you'll never be with anybody.
Ugh.
Right? Because relationships are about
compromise,
forgiveness,
right,
patience, all that kind of stuff. And so that's where I feel the show is going to fill a void, because, and then seeing people also okay, name one show on television where you see an African-American couple hugging each other, kissing each other, holding each other's hands.
Mm.
Just like, and that's universal to me. It's not even a black or white thing. It's just you don't see it with people that look like us.
Right.
I see it with white couples all the time.
Right.
That it's normal.
Right.
I mean, you can see crazy, Caucasian couples, but you're going to see stable, strong Caucasian families or couples as well. You're not
right.
just going to see one, just
right.
Caucasian people acting just nuts
right.
and just they can't. You don't see any representation. And so, I see it as a responsibility of mine as a creator and as someone that's putting these images out there that travel all over the world to, make sure I leave the audience with something besides just laughs.
Right.
And, you know, I want to make people laugh. I want to entertain people. That's the number one goal. Right. But I also want to use the show as a positive tool, especially for black youth. And also, people, like I said, even for people who aren't black, it's just good to see another side, because we're just as diverse, and we are just as diverse and divided and just as crazy as everybody else. Mm. Like, but you don't see, a lot of times we're portrayed as a monolith, as all black people do this and all black, and we don't. We're just as diverse as everybody else.
Right.
And, you know, and I want to show that. That's going to come. It's going to be subtle, but it's going to come out in the show.
Is this a scripted show?
Yes, it's a scripted show. It's not
totally
a reality
scripted.
Show. Totally scripted.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so it's going to be...
It's a single camera comedy.
Okay, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
But the only difference is they're actually the truly married couple. Kids or no kids?
There are no kids.
There are no kids. Right. Oh, so no that might be one of the issues.
Well, that's going to come up. Yeah, they're going to. Yeah. They want to have kids, not that they don't want kids.
Yeah.
But right now, they're single.
So you can take their things that are going on in their life and write.
Yes.
But you already have 9 episodes shot.
Yes.
Is that right? Is that what BET picked up?
Yes.
Is that one? Let's talk about these days. It's so different, even in the music industry. When you try to get with a record label, if you're lucky to find one, they are more likely to pick you up mm-hmm. and produce you if you already come with a full entire package. For example, mm-hmm. like you, they want you to have the CD done. They want all this. I don't want to do anything. There's no more fronting money and, you know, forwarding you some cash for you to do it. They want it done. Is this more likely to happen, that you would get a deal if you go to a network and shop, say, what you have already, which is 9 episodes? What is the... Okay, that means we got 5 minutes. What is the best way, or what way did you go about eventually getting this deal with BET?
Well, after I did the web series, I came up with a concept for the television show, which at the time was called Threesome, and then Trophy Wife. I pitched it around town. Nobody wanted to make it. So then I wrote the scripts. I wrote half of season 1. I wrote 4 episodes. Couldn't get any love there either. And then I had luck. You know, Tyler Perry had done what he did with House of Pain. I was working with another producer, Bentley Evans, who had done something similar, where he wrote and produced his own episodes for a show called Love That Girl that he sold to TV1 with Tatiana Ali and Phil Morris. Mm-hmm. And I worked on those, and I worked for him for a couple of years. And it gave me the confidence to try it myself. The tough part, I mean, the writing was easy because I'm a writer. I took 2 months and I wrote season 1 in 2 months. I didn't leave my house. I didn't pay any bills. I just wrote every 6 days. I wrote a script. I went to France at one point, Paris, Marseille. I never stopped.
And that was that during the time when they had asked you to come there to tell them how to do their web fest that time?
No, I just went as a guest of them.
Let me throw that in. This is the man who created web series. Like, he is the ultimate. So they actually contacted him. France, someone in France said, you know what, please come and teach us how to do a web fest
start the first web series festival in Europe, which is the Marseille Web Fest in the south of France.
Right.
That was in 2011.
Okay, so that was different.
Yeah, but okay. I just went as a guest. Went there for that. But I kept writing. I would show up for my functions, and I go to a hotel room, and I kept writing. And then I came back. I had a whole season 1, I used that to raise the money. I went to people I know who I knew had disposable income, who had always said to me, if you ever do something, Mike, let us know. We'll support you. I went to them. 5 people that told me that. 3 said no. 2 said yes. And then I found 6 other people that said yes. Raised the money. After I had the scripts budgeted out, and then proceeded to, you know, rent a mansion in Calabasas, a 3-acre mansion, and most of the show was shot at this mansion.
Yeah,
and then afterwards spent 14 months in post production.
Yeah,
and then began shopping in 2014, like the summer, and 32 broadcast cable and streaming networks turned us down, said no. Found an agent that had faith in the show, and 9 months later we sold the show to Viacom.
Oh.
And that's how, but I don't think it, I don't know if it I think it gives you a better chance than just pitching. I know it gave me, I know that I would have never, I don't believe I would have ever sold this show pitching it or just writing it. I felt like I had to show them. And my hope is that one person, all you need is one.
Yeah.
Even when everyone's saying no to me, some twice, I mean, BET had said no to me twice in LA. They said yes on the East Coast. That's where it was greenlit, on the East Coast. It was picked up. But,
how do you do
all you
that?
Need is one.
How do you do that? Like you pitch it in LA and it's no, no, no. So you don't give up and say, well, BET as a whole said no. You decided to go to pitch it in the New
York,
right?
Well, my agent did. My agent out of Atlanta. She's wonderful.
So you had a team.
Well, eventually. Okay. And it did help. It made a difference. And my agent, I give her, you know, Dana Weber, all the credit in the world for her belief in me, in the show, and her belief that she could sell it. When she took me on as a client in July of 2015, she said, I can sell this.
Is she a literary agent? Or
no, she's a sales agent. She's a sales agent. Okay. You have
Explain
to have the product.
What that is,
well, that's when you have the product.
Agent confused with literary agent, and then there's talent agent. And
well, when you're trying to get a job as a writer, or, you know, director, producer, those kinds of things, an actor, you have an agent who tries to get you solicited, talent agent.
Mm-hmm.
When you have product, when you have professional product that you're trying to license, which is what I did, trying to sell it, you would get a sales agent. Yeah, so they're moving product the same way.
And where do you get the sales? Where would you start to look
for?
Well,
you can go on the internet. They have a list of agents.
You Google and type sales
agent. In my case, I got a referral. A station owner out of San Diego, I'm going to give him a shout out for the first time.
Yes.
Charles Herring.
Yes.
With the Wealth TV Network. I had approached him. He liked my show. He wanted to license it. He asked me how much it was going to cost him. I gave him an outrageous number because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
He said, Mike, I can't pay that. I can't pay anywhere near that. I'm like, well, what can you pay? What do you want to pay? And I think he took pity on me and knew. He knew I didn't know.
Right.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was guessing.
How do you learn? I mean, it's that.
And so Charles said, you know what? You seem like a good guy. I'm going to turn you on to this agent. I'm going to refer you to this sales agent. She's the best agent I know. She's the best agent we work with for our channel. And why don't you talk to her? Maybe she can help you and guide you better. And that's how I met Dana Weber. It was a referral. I don't think I could have gotten to her. It helped that someone that she did business with.
Yes.
And believed in me, liked the show enough, and then she liked the show. And that's how our relationship started. And once I had, like you said, the right team, we sold the show within a year.
Wow.
And then after we sold the show was actually sold last May, but the deal didn't close until December. It took like 7 months to close the deal.
Now, what was happening during this?
Just the contract going back and forth. It wasn't me. I wasn't holding out for more money. It just, look, Viacom is a multi-billion-dollar company.
Huge.
We're just a little speck.
Right.
I mean, they have so many wonderful shows and movies. And,
right.
And we're not even, I don't even think movies, that's not even their number one thing they make money with. They have amusement parks, et cetera. So you've got to be patient.
Yeah.
You got to be patient.
And I would imagine it's a fearful process because at any time, some executive could come and say, you know what? I changed my mind. We're not going to do it. And they could 86 it.
That's
so
true.
That's got to be
that's
fearful.
True. So you want to close the deal, but at the same time, you want to make sure you get a good deal. You don't want to make a bad deal. Once you make a bad deal, you're stuck with however long it is.
Who was the one who made the good deal? Was it the agent?
It was
because
the agent with my attorney.
Manager,
my attorney,
right?
Ebo, I'm going to give a shout out to my attorney, Ebo Obiaha of Obiaha & Associates of Culver City, who I've been with now for 11 years.
Is he specifically an entertainment attorney?
Yes, he is.
Oh, can you get him on the show?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I get so many emails. I have over 200 emails where people say, why do you not have entertainment attorneys on the show? And I thought, well, I just never thought, you know, to bring one.
I'm sure he'd do
your
show.
Can we bring him on?
Yeah, sure.
Because people are so confused, and plus you can get a couple clients out.
That's right.
But you definitely, when you're at Michael Ejakwe's level, you need an attorney. You cannot do in a deal without an attorney.
Well, I think you should get one even if you're not at that level. If you don't have an agent or manager, because sometimes you can't get an agent or manager, but you know what? You have a better chance of getting an entertainment attorney.
That's right.
And sometimes those attorneys know agents and managers they can refer you to.
Oh, absolutely.
But Ebo was great. Ebo and Dana together. We went through that contract and for 7 months with Viacom. And again, because they're a big company, it takes them a while to get back to you. Like 3 weeks. Every chain, you make one chain, hey, can we cross this T? They get back to you
That's
in three
right.
weeks. But I had to remind myself at one point, I said, man, this is taking forever. This is ridiculous.
Yes.
This is crazy.
Yes.
And then my attorney reminded me, you know you have a deal with Viacom.
That's right.
And you've been trying to get this deal for like 3 years.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, you're right. Let me be cool.
Yeah, you better stop tripping. Yeah,
exactly. Let me stop tripping and be grateful. And the deal eventually, I'll never forget, the deal closed right before Christmas. But I couldn't say a word. They say, don't tell anybody outside of the team until the deal is closed. So I couldn't tell my actors. I couldn't tell my crew. I couldn't tell anyone. But it felt so good to let them know. But then,
are they going to let you keep everybody? everybody that worked on the original show, like, for example, Yolanda or whoever else, or are they going to make adjustments?
The original series we shot, those people will all be represented. Going forward, my goal is to keep everyone.
But they do have the final say.
I suppose.
They might bring
I suppose
people.
They definitely can make suggestions
I'd rather.
But I want to be loyal to the people that got me here.
Absolutely.
Very important to me, especially the talent in front of the camera and certain key people behind the scenes. There's certain people behind the scenes that I'm open to changing. I mean,
A selling point that I wanted to bring up, because a lot of times, you know, most of the time people are working for free to do these things. You know, it's copy credit meals. So it's got to be something where, you know, hopefully the filmmaker will sell it and they'll get to stay on. So that's what I was trying to bring up.
Well, yeah, that's my goal. My goal is to do that. And I know one thing, season one, 9 episodes, everyone who contributed is on.
Okay.
Yolanda's a producer on the show, all 9 episodes.
So they'll have their credits for that at least.
And the actors. And you know, it gives people a chance to see them in that light.
Right.
And hopefully they'll be happy with what they see. Mm. And it will make, if we get more episodes, which I'm praying and hoping that we will, it will allow them to continue in that capacity
because
we were successful.
Right.
You know,
so why change it?
Right. Why broke what ain't fixed?
Why break it?
Absolutely.
Well, that is going to air
Saturday, July 22nd at 10 p.m. on BET Centric, which is like MTV, MTV2, VH1, VH1-2, very similar. It is actually the sister channel, literally, of BET. It is BET Centric, which will become BET Her in September. It is like a Black Lifetime, a Black version of the We Channel. Their focus there is the Black woman.
Right.
That's who their target audience is.
So you got to be careful about looking on just BET when you're looking for this channel. So it'll specifically say BET Centric?
Yes.
Because I have BET. Yes. I watch shows on that, but I've never seen BET.
Yeah, you may want to see what the channel is next to it or before it. And if you don't, just call your local cable carrier and say, I want Centric.
BET
and they'll add it.
Centric.
They'll add it.
Yeah, oh, my
BET
God.
Centric,
well,
yes.
I'm excited. Yes. Oh!
Thank you.
Give me
I'm
an applause
excited.
For Mr. Michael Ejakwe. Yes,
you.
Yes,
thank
yes.
You. Thank you so
well,
much.
Well, I hope they pick it up. I have a feeling they will, and we're all going to keep our fingers crossed. And if they do, you have to come back to promote your second season.
I will.
Can I get
I certainly
a commitment?
Will. Yes, I'll be back.
Yes.
Yes, I will.
Thank you so much, Mr. Michael Ejakwe
Jr. Thank you for having me, Priscilla.
Say goodbye to your fans.
Well, I don't have any
you
fans,
do have
but
fans.
I will say to my friends,
I'm a fan.
Any friends listening, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you tune in Saturday, July 22nd, 10 p.m. on Centric, and check out Beauty and the Baller.
BET. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
and
you.
Also check it out on Facebook at
facebook.com/Beauty and the Baller.
Beauty and the Baller.
Yes.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
See you next week. Thank you.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.